welcome to Podiatrics Pediatric Podcasts. Today we're going to be talking about lactic acidosis. It's the second in two parts in lactic acidosis. So in our last podcast on lactic acidosis, so two podcasts ago, we introduced the concept of lactic acid and lactate and how we might get raises in lactate. Okay, so we talked about this. And today's podcast is going to be going one step further. We focused on a lot of type A reactions. We introduced type A, but we also introduced type B. And I said from an inherited metabolic disease perspective, we would kind of delve into it a little bit more today. So metabolic acidosis. So I have quite a simplistic approach. So when you're looking at a metabolic acidosis, you're looking at a few things. You're looking at the pH, you're looking at the bicarbonate level, you're looking at the PCO2. What you're also looking at as well with metabolic acidosis is you are looking at sometimes the base excess, so the more negative it is, the more of a suggestion this metabolic in origin. And the other thing that I would look at is the anion gap. So anion gap is looking at your cations, which are the two main ones are sodium and potassium, and then subtracting from that the concentration of your major anions, which are chloride, which is Cl minus, and bicarbonate, which is HCO3 minus. So what we're saying is if someone's got a metabolic acidosis and they've got a normal anion gap, probably what this is down to is abnormal loss of bicarbonate. So this is normally bicarbonate losing or bicarbonate wasting. So the two situations where this can happen, the two most common situations, are a renal tubular acidosis, so renal loss of bicarbonate, or diarrhea, so gastrointestinal loss of bicarbonate. The next category would be raised anion gap. So if someone has got a metabolic acidosis with a raised anion gap, we would think about, you know, methanol, uremia, DKA, phenaldehyde, isoniazid, lactic acidosis, ethylene glycol and salicylates, or ethanol as well can come into that. Ethanol's an interesting one. So raised anion gap, we've got a few differentials. The main things from an inherited metabolic perspective are organic acidopathy, so increased amount of organic acids, raising your anion gap because organic acids are unmeasured anions, ketoacidosis, so we talked about diabetic ketoacidosis, we also talked about alcoholic ketoacidosis. So these are increased amount of ketones, and ketones are anions, so negatively charged, unmeasured anions, so we'd increase your anion gap. And lactic acidosis, so lactic acid is an anion, an unmeasured anion. So we're going to talk about lactic acidosis. So abnormal accumulation of lactic acid is the most common cause of pathologic metabolic acidosis in children. So if a child has got a metabolic acidosis, the thing that we want to consider is lactic acidosis. So that's the big one. That's what we're going to talk about. So most cases of lactic acidosis in children are what we call a type A lactic acidosis. So a type A lactic acidosis is due to hypoxia or hypoperfusion. So what we mean by that is a poor oxygen supply or a poor circulation. Examples in children might be something like congenital heart disease, so left ventricular outflow obstruction, pulmonary hypertension, cyanotic heart disease. These could all result in a type A lactic acidosis. So if theoretically your lactate was elevated because of hypoxia, then when you correct the hypoxia, you would correct the high lactate. Lactate is fundamentally really important for physiology nerds like me because it's a dead-end metabolite. It's really cool because it's eliminated by the same route as it's formed. So we're aware that pyruvate is a product of glycolysis. So if you take glucose, C6H12O6, and through a series of processes involve things like glucose-6-phosphate and other intermediates, you will eventually form pyruvate. And then pyruvate will be converted to lactate by an enzyme called lactate dehydrogenase. And the thing that they often don't tell you in medical school is pyruvate is converted to lactate by lactate dehydrogenase in the forwards reaction. In the backwards reaction, we can do the opposite, convert lactate to pyruvate, but it's the same enzyme, lactate dehydrogenase, that does this. So pyruvate can be converted to lactate, and lactate can be converted to pyruvate based on lactate dehydrogenase enzyme, which is the catalyst in the forward and in the backwards reaction. We know from chemistry that this, when you've got a forwards reaction and backwards reaction, is we have got an equilibrium. And with every chemical equilibrium, there are factors that will favour the movement in the forwards reaction, so from pyruvate to lactate, and the backwards reaction from lactate to pyruvate. When we've got lactate, lactate is normally then metabolised with the Cori cycle in the liver. So in this equilibrium, to recap, lactate dehydrogenase is your catalyst in the forwards and the backwards reaction. This equilibrium concentration of lactate is proportional to the concentration of pyruvate and the ratio of your NADH and your NAD+. Remember that NAD+ and NADH are really important in your electron transport chain, because the difference between NADH and NAD+ is the loss of a hydrogen. And what happens is hydrogen has got electrons associated with it, a hydrogen atom. And when you lose that, you become NAD+ because you've lost electrons. If pyruvate increases or your NADH goes up, your lactate goes up. Similarly, if your hydrogen ions go up, your lactate goes up. So there are certain factors in this equilibrium that will cause your lactate to go up. So your lactate is proportional to your pyruvate multiplied by your hydrogen ions multiplied by your NADH. So if any of those things go up, your lactate goes up. So if pyruvate, hydrogen ions or NADH go up, your pyruvate goes up. Just important considerations to be aware of rather than memorise. The first mechanism I'm going to talk about why your lactate might go up, might be pyruvate accumulation. So we've said that the equilibrium concentration of lactate is proportional to the equilibrium concentration of pyruvate. So if your pyruvate goes up, your lactate goes up. So glycolysis is how you take a molecule of glucose with its six carbons and you form two sets of three carbon long pyruvates. So pyruvate's the end product in this process, okay? Lots of enzymes in between, but essentially glycolysis is taking a six carbon glucose and splitting it into two, three carbon pyruvates. What we generate through glycolysis is we take a six carbon glucose and we form two, three carbon pyruvates with a net generation of two ATP and two NADH. NADH is really important in our cytochrome complex. It's anaerobic, so it's the only source of ATP in anaerobic conditions. So if you've got an erythrocyte with no mitochondria, glycolysis is the main way that that erythrocyte will generate ATP. So it's really, really important for those cells such as erythrocytes with no mitochondria. NADH is really crucial as well. So we love this process of glycolysis. So in anaerobic conditions, it allows survival. It's by no means perfect, but it allows survival. You generate ATP, which is really, really important for energy, and NADH. NADH is really important because NADH will transfer its electrons to the cytochrome complex 1 during this process of oxidative phosphorylation that I've talked about before. So it's really, really important. Really important coenzyme. And that's what we want to talk about. So NADH, really important for transferring electrons. That's why NADH becomes NAD+, because the electrons leave with the donated hydrogen and therefore the resulting NAD+. Glycolysis happens in your cytoplasm. Cytoplasm is a really easy thing to remember. Cyto means cell, plasm means liquid. So it's the thick solution which fills every cell. Glycolysis is when you take glucose, which is C6H12O6, and you convert it to 2,3-carbon pyruvate molecules. Pyruvic acid is negatively charged, and you generate 2 molecules of ATP per molecule of glucose. How do we accumulate pyruvate then? Increased production of pyruvate, decreased oxidation of pyruvate. Okay? Pyruvate is converted to acetyl-CoA, which is a process that involves, as one of its steps, oxidation by an enzyme complex. We're going to talk about that enzyme complex now. So we have got your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex that involves three enzymes that we call kind of E1, E2, E3, which has the function of taking your pyruvate and converting it to acetyl-CoA. So that's what it does. So one of these reactions, how we get from pyruvate to acetyl-CoA, is we want to remove a carboxyl group. So a carboxyl group is a carbon-oxygen double bond and a carbon-oxygen single bond. Because of the differences in electron density between these two bonds, the carbon-oxygen single bond, the oxygen on that bond will have a negative charge and therefore will have electrons. So if we remove this carboxyl group, which is two oxygens and one carbon, what does that sound like for us? CO2. So we're basically removing CO2 essentially. And then what happens is we then get this phenomenon where we've got this NAD plus and we've got these electrons, and these electrons can react with this NAD plus and gain electrons. So the electrons from the oxygen then can react or be transferred to NAD plus, and NAD plus will then be reduced to NADH. This acetyl group that's formed is transferred to a coenzyme A and you get acetyl-CoA. Don't worry too much about the other processes. Decarboxylase is another important enzyme, and this removes CO2 from pyruvate to form acetaldehyde, okay, which is often referred to as oxaloacetate. Which enzyme, whether you form acetyl-CoA or oxaloacetate, depends on how much acetyl-CoA you've got and how much ATP you've got. Really simply, this reaction, okay, that we'll talk about in a second, about pyruvate decarboxylase, requires acetyl-CoA. So if you've got a lot of acetyl-CoA, you can do this reaction more. If you haven't got any acetyl-CoA, you will favour the other pathway. And we'll talk about those two pathways now. So PDH deficiency, so if you've got problems with this pyruvate dehydrogenase complex, E1, E2, E3, that fundamentally is about converting pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. You can present with persistent lactic acidosis, and normally the prognosis is death within a few weeks or months, and can be associated with agenesis of your corpus callosum. Remember, your corpus callosum is a bridge of nervous tissue that connects your two cerebral hemispheres, your left and your right. And it's the main communication pathway or crossover for signals between your two cerebral hemispheres. And it has over 200 million nerve fibers, really important anatomical structure. So your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex is about converting pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. These patients can present with psychomotor problems, hypotonia, failure to thrive, and seizures. What might you find on their bloods? So you'll get persistently elevated lactate levels. And why might you get that? Because you lack the enzyme that converts pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. Your pyruvate goes up. And what did we say about our equilibrium reaction? Pyruvate concentration is proportional to lactate concentration. So pyruvate goes up, lactate goes up. Your acidosis is worsened by your carbohydrate ingestion, because what happens is when you've got carbohydrates, one of the ways of metabolizing carbohydrates, C6H12O6 glucose, is glycolysis. What does glycolysis yield as a product is pyruvate. If you lack the enzyme that converts pyruvate to acetyl-CoA, you're going to have more pyruvate and therefore your glycolytic burden has gone up. Your lactate pyruvate ratio is normal, which is really important because that hints that this is a problem with pyruvate metabolism, and your plasma alanine is elevated. The reason that your plasma alanine is elevated is really simple. So plasma alanine also exists in kind of like an equilibrium with pyruvate as well. So if your pyruvate goes up, your alanine can go up as well. If you were to look at their organic acids in their urine, the lactate will be high, which is unsurprising, and your 2-hydroxybutyrate goes up. That is a non-specific and non-important finding for this condition because it's an organic acid that tends to go up in any patient with severe lactic acidosis, regardless of the cause. So it doesn't actually hint at any particular diagnosis. Fine. So your lactate pyruvate ratio will be normal. If your lactate pyruvate ratio is high, you're looking more at a Krebs cycle defect. If your lactate pyruvate ratio is normal, this is normally a defect in pyruvate metabolism. Why is your alanine high? Well, simply, why would your alanine go up? Well, it's a simple thing where alanine can be converted to pyruvate. Okay, so alanine, as it exists, one of the things that can happen is transamination. So alanine can undergo transamination from pyruvate. So if you've got pyruvate, it can go in both directions. So you can form pyruvate from alanine, but this normally requires your liver to be functioning well. The other thing can happen where you can have pyruvate, and pyruvate can be converted to alanine through transamination. And what that means is you take alanine, which is an amino acid, and you remove the amino group. So with alanine, it has got two parts because it's an amino acid. It's got an amino group, which is NH2, and it's got a carboxylic acid group, which is a carbon-oxygen double bond, and then a hydroxyl or an OH group attached to that carbon. So if you remove the amino group, you can then form something like pyruvic acid. So alanine can be converted to pyruvic acid and glutamic acid. So transamination is a way of getting from pyruvate to alanine. So if you've got loads of pyruvate swimming around, your alanine can go up because there's more of it to transaminate. Okay, so that's one of the things that can happen. So this can happen in both directions. So you can form pyruvic acid from alanine and you can form alanine from pyruvate through this transamination. So you've got transamination and deamination. We won't talk about that. Diagnosis of pyruvate dehydrogenase deficiency, a problem with E1, E2 or E3, can be diagnosed in cultured fibroblasts. Fibroblasts are important cells that make up connective tissue, and they're cells that help manufacture your extracellular matrix and collagen. How do you manage this? Well, you give them a high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. If you give them less carbohydrate, there's less glycolysis. That reduces your glycolytic load and decreases the amount of pyruvate you're forming that can be converted to lactate. You can give them something that is called dichloroacetate that is a pyruvate analogue, so structurally similar to pyruvate. This increases your pyruvate dehydrogenase activity and inhibits an enzyme called pyruvate dehydrogenase kinase that, as you can imagine, breaks down pyruvate dehydrogenase, increasing the amount of PDH available. The second enzyme I'm going to talk about is pyruvate carboxylase. So this is an enzyme that's dependent upon biotin. So biotin's your vitamin B8, your B vitamin's super duper important in your body, really important for your neurological system as well. And what this specific enzyme, pyruvate carboxylase, does is it catalyzes a reaction, which is the removal of CO2. So we call it decarboxylation, which explains why it's called pyruvate carboxylase. So it catalyzes the removal of CO2 from pyruvate to form oxaloacetate. So we said that pyruvate dehydrogenase complex is responsible for converting pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. This pyruvate carboxylase is responsible for converting pyruvate to oxaloacetate. Oxaloacetate is really, really important. But oxaloacetate and this conversion from pyruvate to oxaloacetate needs acetyl-CoA, okay? So we talked about earlier on, depending, the fate of pyruvate depends on your metabolic environment. If you have got loads of acetyl-CoA, loads of it, you can actually use your pyruvate carboxylase a little bit more. So you can convert pyruvate to oxaloacetate, okay? If you don't have much acetyl-CoA, you can't convert pyruvate to oxaloacetate using pyruvate carboxylase. So you have to convert pyruvate to acetyl-CoA through pyruvate dehydrogenase complex. It's really simple if you think about it. If you haven't got much acetyl-CoA, you need to make acetyl-CoA. And how do you do that? Well, you convert pyruvate to acetyl-CoA with your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex. If you've got loads of acetyl-CoA, you don't need to make any more. So you can use that acetyl-CoA to convert pyruvate to oxaloacetate using pyruvate carboxylase. So it's as simple as that. It depends on the amount of acetyl-CoA you've got. Pyruvate carboxylase deficiency is incredibly rare. It will give you a metabolic acidosis in the first few months of life. Hypoglycemia is not a prominent feature, despite pyruvate carboxylase being a really important aspect in gluconeogenesis, because you can find other ways of synthesizing glucose. Your lactate pyruvate ratio is normal because this is a problem of pyruvate metabolism. Your proline tends to be elevated. And what we know about in this condition is with excess pyruvate, that will affect your proline incorporation into plasma. So that's why your proline is elevated. Why the metabolic changes? So if we did some blood tests and some analysis in patients with pyruvate carboxylase deficiency, we would find that their lactate and their pyruvate would be high. Why is that? Because they lack the pyruvate carboxylase enzyme. What does this enzyme do? It converts pyruvate to oxaloacetate. So if you lack that enzyme, you're going to have more pyruvate and more lactate. Okay, so we accumulate the pyruvate in the plasma. That excess pyruvate is converted to lactate by lactate dehydrogenase, and therefore your plasma lactate will be high. You get high alanine, and we said, why is alanine really important? Because if you've got excess pyruvate, we can convert that pyruvate through transamination to alanine. So that's why your alanine would go up. Your citrulline and lysine will go up as well. And the reason this is because oxaloacetate is really, really important for the production of aspartic acid. And aspartic acid plays a crucial function, or aspartate, I should say, plays an important function in the urea cycle. So your citrulline and lysine will tend to go up because of this block in the urea cycle, okay? So that's quite important. So because of this block, okay, so aspartate catalyzes the conversion of citrulline to arginino-succinic acid. So if you haven't got enough aspartate or aspartic acid because it's formed from oxaloacetate, and you haven't formed oxaloacetate because you lack the enzyme that converts pyruvate to oxaloacetate, you will have low oxaloacetate. You haven't got that which is converted to aspartic acid. Aspartic acid catalyzes the conversion of citrulline to arginino-succinic acid, so your citrulline levels go down. So it's very, very simple. Metabolic medicine, block somewhere, you can't make something and other things accumulate because you can't get rid of them or metabolize them. You get low aspartic acid for the reasons that I've talked about, and low glutamine because of low oxaloacetate. So pyruvate carboxylase deficiency is a problem with converting pyruvate to oxaloacetate, which is a problem. Okay, so that's what happens in that situation. Your LP ratio, so your lactate pyruvate ratio, will be normal because there's a problem in pyruvate metabolism. Oxaloacetate forms an important junction between your Krebs cycle and your urea cycle. So why we're saying things about citrulline and arginine succinic acid that are involved in the urea cycle, oxaloacetate is so crucial. They're looking at it in Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease. It is a molecule of the present, it's a molecule of the future. It forms a crucial bridge between your Krebs cycle and your urea cycle. So if you have problems with oxaloacetate production, as you get in pyruvate carboxylase deficiency, this is bad news, because if you can't produce oxaloacetate, you have got big, big problems, because it forms this important junction between your Krebs and your urea cycle. You diagnose it by looking at your pyruvate carboxylase activity in fibroblasts, and you can treat it through giving large amounts of biotin. I said it's a biotin-dependent enzyme. So if you give them lots of biotin, you can potentially produce more pyruvate carboxylase. So you just tend to load them up on biotin as the treatment. So that brings us towards the end of today's podcast. So what have we talked about? Well, I've talked to you about the importance of glycolysis. I've talked to you about type A and type B lactic acidosis. I've discussed normal anion gap, which is due to abnormal loss of bicarbonate, renal tuber acidosis and diarrhea. Talked about raised anion gap, and I've said that lactic acidosis is one of the causes of a metabolic acidosis with a raised anion gap. We've talked about glycolysis, and I've mentioned two really important enzymes involved in the fate of pyruvate. Pyruvate is produced from glycolysis, and depending what happens next to pyruvate depends on your metabolic environment. We've got your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex composed of three enzymes, E1, E2, E3, that if they all do their job properly, you take pyruvate and you convert it to acetyl-CoA, which is really important because acetyl-CoA then can enter your Krebs cycle. If you don't have much in the way of acetyl-CoA, then what you want to do is make acetyl-CoA. Okay, so you'll want to upregulate your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex to form acetyl-CoA from pyruvate. If you've got tons of acetyl-CoA, fantastic, because another enzyme called pyruvate carboxylase is dependent upon acetyl-CoA to form oxaloacetate. So if you've got loads of acetyl-CoA, that can help form oxaloacetate from pyruvate using pyruvate carboxylase. So that's really, really crucial. Oxaloacetate, as we've said, forms an important junction between your Krebs cycle and your urea cycle, and therefore the resulting problems, if you have got pyruvate carboxylase deficiency, is you are going to be deficient in certain amino acids, you're going to have low aspartic acid and glutamine, you're going to have a buildup of alanine, citrulline and lysine, because of the urea cycle blocks with citrulline and lysine, and with alanine because of pyruvate shunting, okay, and transamination. So hopefully this has been useful. The main things I want you to take from today's podcast is I want you to know what glycolysis is. So it's the conversion of C6H12O6 to pyruvate, and how the fate of pyruvate depends on your acetyl-CoA levels. If your acetyl-CoA levels are high, you can use this acetyl-CoA, which is crucial for pyruvate carboxylase to make oxaloacetate. If your acetyl-CoA levels are low, then you can't use that pathway. You have to use your pyruvate dehydrogenase complex that luckily for us forms acetyl-CoA. And hopefully then you'll manufacture acetyl-CoA, and then you can use that to use the pyruvate carboxylase enzyme and generate that really important chemical, oxaloacetate. The one thing I want you to remember today is oxaloacetate is really important and is an intense topic of research, especially in the last 2-3 years, looking at neurodegenerative conditions. Thank you very much for listening.